The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by six local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Midpoint Library System, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Good morning. You are listening to WYSO in Yellow Springs. I'm Vic McCunis. We have the Book Nook coming up for you this morning. And today, Raul Ramos y Sanchez returns to the program. We'll be talking to him about his new novel. It's called The Skinny Years. It's set mostly in Miami in the 1960s. And we follow the adventures of Skinny between the ages of 8 and 18 years old. That is The Skinny Years, coming up in the Book Nook with Raul Ramos y Sanchez, following NPR News. Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome back to the program today Raul Ramos y Sanchez. His new novel is called The Skinny Years. He joins us by telephone from Beaver Creek. Hello, Raul.
Hi, Vic. Good to be here with you.
Raul, this is a very different book for you. How did this happen? How did this come about? What was the basis for this project?
Well, you know, with everything, there's like the book, there's the story of the book, and then there's the story behind the story of the book. And this was something that most authors write their first book. It's kind of a semi-autobiographical type of story. And this was not, my first book, as you know, was the first part of the Class H trilogy, America Libre, which was a very social, very political type story, a whole trilogy of books. And this one was that semi-autobiographical book that everybody writes, only I wrote it as the third book that I ever wrote. And so unlike my other novels, which I'm glad that we had a chance to discuss back in 2012, this book is a lot more intimate, a lot more personal. But it's not a story about me. It's really a story about a family that I grew up around. And part of the story behind the story is that in the process of writing that book, I was actually able to reconnect with that family and my own family in Cuba, which I had lost touch with for over 50 years. So it's really a very different and a much more personal story, although, again, it's not about me, but it is about the environment that I grew up in.
And the title is derived from your main character, The Skinny Years. This is the story of a guy named Victor, but his nickname is Skinny. And this is a very 1960s story, and we follow him from, is it age 8 to age 18, that 10-year period?
Yes, yes. His name is Skinny because the family name is Delgado, which in Spanish means slender, but it's also, you know, a common family name. And the kid at the time when he arrives in the States is pretty chubby, and so, as kids are wont to do, they give him the ironic nickname of Skinny because of his last name in Spanish. And so from there begins his transformation. At one point in the book, actually, he's no longer ironically skinny. He actually grows into a rather slender guy. And so the name Skinny is no longer ironic. But over the course of that 10 years, I don't want to trivialize it by saying it's the Cuban-American version of the Wonder Years, but it's something akin to that. It's a coming-of-age story, of course, and so you go through the experience of growing from, you know, from an 8 to 18, which is a huge 10-year span in everyone's life, and then, of course, it's set in the 60s in Miami when you have this tremendous upheaval of the Cuban refugees arriving into the area, along with the growth of the civil rights movement, and then eventually the emergence of the youth counterculture. And Skinny, is caught up in all of this, but with a very, very personal perspective, which is his own ethnicity, his Hispanic way of looking at all these things. But so he's a hybrid, and I thought he would make a pretty interesting story for a lot of people, no matter what their background is, if they went through the 60s or if they're looking back on it wondering what it was like.
I love this cover design. You've got 9 very colorful photos on the cover of the book, The Skinny Years, and the top left one, I know that's Fidel Castro. Then you've got one with an atomic bomb mushroom cloud. Now, I'm wondering, in the middle on the left, is that Hillary Clinton?
No.
Sure looks like her.
That's a great... Oh, my wife is going to love that.
Is that your wife?
One of the problems of finding photos for covers is that, you know, you have to get the rights to use them. That's actually my wife.
Oh, wow. The guy in the middle on the right side, is that you?
Yes, you have a very perceptive eye, Vic, because you know me. You've seen me. Very few people recognize that as me, correct?
Okay. In case you're just tuning in, my guest is Raul Ramos y Sanchez, and his new novel is The Skinny Years. Okay, we talked a little bit about skinny, and you mentioned that this is a coming-of-age story. It is also a love story, and it's a story of friendship between Skinny and his best friend, a guy named Loco, another nice nickname. And there's a lot more to this. In fact, as we get to the end of the book, this really does turn into kind of a grit lit novel, Raul. I'm sure you're aware of that.
Well, you know, every author hates being put in a genre, being put in a box. And then, of course, as a Latino author, you dread that even more because, you know, you don't want to be pigeonholed and then, oh, yeah, that book's for them. That book's for those guys, you know. So I really kind of shy away from labels. I tried to write the book as it felt real to me and as it felt like it captured my experience. And, you know, looking back on it, I spent 30 years with all these memories in the back of my mind. I came to Dayton after my mom married a guy from this area. She then had 2 more kids with him, and that was a sum total of my family for, you know, over 50 years. And then through writing this book, I actually discovered friends that I had lost touch with for 30 years down in South Florida, and even more so my own family in Cuba that I'd not seen for over 50 years. Came as a consequence of this book. So it was an amazing part of the story behind the story of how I was able to do that. And so I, you know, trying to put it into a genre is you know, I understand, but I hope that people read it and they kind of accept it for what it is, which is, you know, like everything else. It's a sum of all of the experiences that I've had. And hopefully people will find it interesting.
Well, Raul, I'm certainly not trying to categorize you. And all I can say is grit lit is hot right now.
Okay.
And you've got some grit lit stuff going on. All this stuff at the end in the commune. And when you bring in these 2 brothers from Kentucky, that is pure grit lit. And anyone who reads it's going to go, man, that is dark, dark, dark stuff. Okay, let's talk about this, what you just mentioned again, your reconnection with your relatives in Cuba. How did that happen? What was that all about?
Well, that was part of the, when my mom's husband, who recently passed away and was a wonderful guy and gave me a brother and sister who are the closest people in the world to me, he did some research. He was doing genealogy. When he found out that I was doing this book, he said, let me see if I can find relatives for you. And so he began a search through his own research and contacted. He found 2 names in Cuba. He said, are these people related to you? And sure enough, I said, yeah, those are 2 of my cousins, my 2 oldest cousins. So he wrote them. Because keep in mind, Vic, at this point, this is in 2011, and I don't know what Cuba's like at this point. I think they may think we're the traitors who left for the U.S., and they may want to have nothing to do with us. And I remember leaving Cuba when there were militiamen sitting on the sidewalk with machine guns in their laps, protecting the street from, you know, what they saw as, you know, the American invasion that was due to come at any time. So this is where I leave Cuba and what I imagine Cuba is still like. So when he writes to them on my behalf and on behalf of my brother and sister as well, we find out that, no, they remember us, and they're very welcoming, and they can't wait to hear from us. And so it was like this falling away of this incredible, all of these memories that I had of the Cold War just fell away. And it was like, this is my family. They're still there. And so I was able to arrange a trip to Cuba after 52 years. I went back there in 2013, and it was incredible. My cousins, I have two aunts and one uncle still alive. All of my cousins are first generation except one, and then all their kids and grandkids knew about us. They remembered, you know, my mom who had left with me when I was a little kid at 6 years old, and we had this incredible reunion. My sister was able to make it down there too, and my mom had always told us about our family, but we never imagined. I never, Vic, ever thought I'd see those people again. I thought they were just memories. So to actually go back, fly in over Havana Harbor, look down and see the city that I remember that I'd left in a plane 52 years earlier, to go back and see that again and then see those people, and it was just something I never, ever imagined. And so I've been back. I was back in 2015, and I'm going back there again in January. And my wife, her family's from Xenia. She's a local girl from the Dayton area. And she became Cuban while she was down there. And she started speaking Spanish. She started embracing. It was all the hugging and the kissing and the singing and the dancing. It was just an incredible experience. And again, I say starting this book put me in touch with that family, put me in touch with friends who I hadn't seen from the South Florida area. That alone has been worth the time it took to write the book. Anything else that comes after that is going to be great.
Well,
it's gravy.
This is the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. The Book Nook comes your way every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. and every Sunday at 10:30 in the morning. And my guest today is Raul Ramos y Sanchez. And we're talking about the skinny years. And we'll continue our interview with Raul right after this. My guest is Raul Ramos y Sanchez. His book is The Skinny Years. We were talking about families and families in Cuba and Skinny's dad. He's quite a character. Let's talk about his dad. Tell us who he is and what he does for a living.
His dad is actually, well, the main adult characters are pretty closely drawn to a family that I grew up near in Miami. We lived there from 57 to 67. And this was a family that I knew that, just like the main characters in the story, they had been a very wealthy family in Cuba. They moved to the States and then found themselves broke. And, you know, like Richard Pryor used to say, white people don't know how to live without money. Well, rich Cubans don't know how to live without money either. They had a very difficult time coping. But yet, they were so incredibly joyful. And it was an experience which, you know, at the time I was an only child. So I would hang over there, and there would be, you know, the son who was my age, the daughter, there was another son. They eventually had a third child. And how they dealt with it was so unique, because they would have these difficulties of dealing with money, having enough to eat, you know, how are we going to pay the rent? And then one day they'd be fighting and screaming and yelling, and then the next day everybody's laughing about it and hugging. And it was an incredible experience of how people cope with difficult situations. And that all that stuff stayed in the back of my mind. But the father, in the story, he's a law professor, and he writes articles that are anti-communist, which, of course, wins the approval of Batista, who himself poses, you know, he sets himself up. Batista being, of course, the strong man who ruled Cuba before Castro and his revolution took over. And so he's in Batista's inner circle, and as a wealthy guy, he enjoys all the privileges. But, of course, when Castro comes to power, they have to flee because, you know, they're seeing themselves as being in danger. And so when he comes to the U.S., he's too proud to take a job because the only thing he can do, and this is Miami of 1960, there weren't a lot of Cuban language newspapers or radio stations. Really, if you didn't speak English, you're about all you could expect to do was push a broom. I mean, that was it for you. And, of course, he's too proud. You know, he doesn't want, he's not going to, I'm not going to push a broom, you know. And so his mother-in-law is always giving him a hard time because she's saying, well, you know, hey, you're too proud to take a job, but you're going to let your kids starve or what? And so he's also convinced that Castro is going to fall at any moment. Oh, Castro can't last. And, of course, there's there's a whole generation of Cubans that are that have been waiting for 50 years for that to happen. And so he's always, you know, expecting that Castro's going to fall. So in the meantime, his wife steps up, who is a debutante, and, you know, her skill is arranging flower arrangements for charity balls. So she decides to go to work as a maid under the table because they don't have, at the time, they did not have permission to work. So they were essentially undocumented immigrants. They were working without papers. But they had no choice. It was either that or starve. There wasn't any welfare or anything like that that was going to help them. So they had to do what they could to survive. And so, of course, Skinny is terrified. You know, Victor is like, oh, my mom's going to get caught. And so he's always having these, you know, nightmares about, you know, his family going to jail, getting deported, going back to Cuba, and then being put up against the wall and shot. So it's a tough time for the family, and the dad in particular doesn't do a whole lot to help. But as we find out through later in the book, we get a different perspective on the dad as well.
And like many families that left Cuba and were split up, you were separated from family there. There's an uncle, there's a brother that was left behind, and we find out more about him as the story goes on. But he's someone that Skinny's dad doesn't talk about. And
yes.
Skinny doesn't really know anything about the brother, the uncle. He doesn't know what might have happened to him. He's hopeful that maybe he'll get to meet him someday, but you'll need to read the book to find out about the missing uncle.
Well, I love the part when he asks about his uncle, and there's a and I hope I don't get our family rating, you know, revoked on this, but there's a saying in Cuba that children talk when chickens pee. And so that's how it was for me growing up and every other Cuban child from that generation. You didn't question adults. Once they said something, that was the end of the conversation. You know?
Right.
So when he asked about his uncle, that's what he gets told. And so he is always wondering.
Well, I think that was fairly universal during our decade of the 60s. I can remember being told that was the way it was because that's what my dad said. You know, it wasn't like you could dispute it or argue with it or reason. That was the way it was. Be seen, not heard.
That's
right.
That's the era.
I don't know anything about chickens, but.
Well, follow one around one time.
Okay, I'll do that. The book is The Skinny Years. Raul Ramos y Sanchez wrote it. I understand you have an event coming up here at one of our wonderful public libraries. Can you tell us about the event? What's going on?
Sure. On September the 12th, I will be appearing along with another author from the area, John Kachuba. And we will be at the Centerville Library. That's the one on Spring Valley, not the Woodburn one, but the Spring Valley location for the Centerville Library. We'll be there for on September the 12th as part of the Second Monday Authors Program. And John Kachuba and I will be in the lobby of the Centerville Library from 1 to 3 p.m. We'll be there. We'll have books for sale. We can be happy to talk to people about our books. This is all I want to give a shout out to Sue Shea of the library. She has arranged this as well as some other events. I know, Vic, you hosted one of them earlier this year, and it's a tremendous person and a great resource to have for area readers and authors. And so the Second Monday Authors, September 12th, 1 to 3 p.m. at the library lobby at the Centerville Library.
And that is Raul, and Do you want to tell us about John's book, too? You want to mention that book?
Sure. His book is called The Savage Apostle, and it's a 2015 release that was set in 17th century New England, and it explores the tension between the English colonists and the natives that led to a very unfortunate war at the time. And so John will be presenting that book, and I will be presenting The Skinny Years.
Okay. And that is Monday, September 12th, did you say? Okay, 1 to 3 o'clock. All right.
1 to 3 p.m.
And right now we're talking to Raul about his novel, The Skinny Years, and it's very much a story of this friendship that Skinny has with this kid named Loco. And Loco seems to turn up whenever Skinny is in kind of a tight spot. He's that kind of a friend. They lose touch for a while, and then Skinny has got himself in some sort of a situation, and here's Loco right there to kind of save him. And that's a true friend.
Well, I had a friend much like Loco. And again, as I say, this is not an autobiographical story, but it's the characters are composites of people that I grew up around. And it turns out this friend eventually became a junkie. But when we were kids, we were in that the puberty age, he was kind of like the guy that was always there for me. And you know, he was a person who I knew was a tough kid, but really a good kid. He had a lot of problems with his family. And, you know, we lost touch with each other. And unfortunately, he's one person I was not able to get back in touch with. But it was one of those things that I dedicated that character hit to his memory because of all the things that he had done for me. And so I had him be the buddy to Skinny. And in the end of the book, and I don't want to reveal too much, but we find out just how much that Loco really cared for Skinny and what he did to protect him. It was a lifelong thing.
My guest is Raul Ramos y Sanchez. His novel is The Skinny Years. You mentioned puberty, and this is pretty well done. I like the way you handle his puberty and the hormones, and we meet a character named Lorenzo. That's pretty darn funny, Raul.
You're going to lose our family rating, I can tell, right?
We're not even going to talk about Lorenzo. We're not going to go there. You've got to read the book to find out who Lorenzo is, and Lorenzo pops up in the strangest places.
That's well put, Vic. I do say that there's one thing. It's not autobiographical, but there's one part of the book in Skinny. When he reaches that era of the rising sap, he becomes convinced that the role of adults in the world, adults are placed on Earth to completely thwart his will and make him miserable. And he is absolutely convinced of that. And you know what? When I was 14, that's exactly what I thought about adults. They were just the bane of my existence. And so it was really an author's luxury of being able to put that into a book.
Yeah, it rings true. I liked your musical references. You have a number of them in here, and for those of us who love the music from this period, it's very nostalgic to hear about these people in the commune, and the guy that kind of thinks he runs things in the commune is arguing with someone else that the Grateful Dead were better than the Beatles. And you've got a lot of songs mentioned in here. We've got Jimi Hendrix and just a whole variety of musical references, which, well, obviously you were there. You knew the good music, and it's fun to read that in your book.
Well, you know, it's that dual identity, you know, of being a first-generation immigrant where you're completely immersed in the youth culture, and yet you still have this side of you that you know isn't completely in sync with everything else. And I remember a friend of mine from California who read this, and he was telling me it was really great as an immigrant to read the East Coast Latino immigrant experience, because of course in California almost everyone is of Mexican origin, and so on the East Coast, we have a much more Caribbean and Latin American type of mix of Hispanics. But it was being having a foot in each of those cultures was an experience that was really amazing, because I can relate to everything mostly that you can in terms of, you know, when we would go to like the Planet, which is one of the teen clubs, and you'd have all the social tribes from that era. You had the surfers, right, and then and you had the preppies, and then you had the freaks, and then you had the jocks. You know, all of those things were there for me, and then that whole other layer of you know, well, I'm also, you know, this other ethnicity, and my parents speak a different language at home, and you know, we eat different food, and our holidays are kind of not quite in sync. So it was an experience I wanted to try and get across to readers that, you know, this was an alternate universe, like a parallel universe that actually exists during that era, and probably in every era. I mean, I'm sure that young people nowadays who are first-generation immigrants go through the exact same thing.
What was your nickname, Raul?
My nickname?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, Vic, you are really digging deep.
Are you embarrassed to tell us what your nickname was?
No. Actually, it was a very common nickname. People called me Bobby.
Bobby.
When I was growing up. And in fact, my friends from college that I still know, many of them in Yellow Springs, still call me Bob. And some of my mom used to go back and forth between Raul, and she would call me Bobby. And my brother and sister, when they were growing up, called me Bobby, too. So you caught on. Yes, everybody had a nickname when I was growing up, though. That was just how it was. So it's very perceptive of you to pick up that I had a nickname, too.
Well, of course you did. Well, why did they call you that? I don't get it.
You know, I have two stories, and you can pick whichever one you want.
Okay.
The kids in the neighborhood had a hard time pronouncing Raul, so they decided to call me Bobby. And when we were moving from Key West to Miami, I had sensed that people had a hard time with my name, so I told my mom I wanted to be called Bobby when I get to Miami.
Oh.
And so you can pick whichever one of those you want.
Okay. Well, a lot of times we don't get to pick our nicknames, so that's nice that you actually said, I want to be called Bobby, so that was your choice.
Yep. But that goes to show you how you know, much you know, we wanted to assimilate, all of us did, and it worked out.
Well, you just mentioned these cliques at this nightclub. Was that really a real place that you went
yes,
to?
Yes, actually it was.
Okay.
It was Miami, you know, had several of those teen clubs. I remember going to three different ones, one in Hialeah, one in North Miami, and one in Coral Gables. And so, yeah, there was no alcohol served. And you couldn't be over 18 to get in there, but they would have really good music. Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels was one of the regulars there. Some up-and-coming bands. They did a lot of live music as well as recorded stuff. And it was all that whole psychedelic experience, as described in the book, you know, with strobe lights and the gels and the film clips. And it was literally a trip to go in there.
Well, I like the fact that even though this isn't humor, you have some humorous stuff. You write in a humorous way. It's very kind of low-key humor, but it's still funny. Like, I laughed when you are at that nightclub in 1966 at the Planet, and you're talking about the various groups of kids, the surfers. You've got a guy in there who is pretending that he's not Cuban. He's a surfer,
yep.
And he's embarrassed when he's recognized by Skinny, and he denies that that's who he is. Skinny knew him back in Little League. But I'm just going to read this one paragraph that you have here, and you write, another common species was the preppies. Sporting button-down shirts or pleated skirts, they mostly huddled against the walls, shooting sidelong glances and whispering as they took in the scene. Skinny imagined them as adults living in Coral Gables and naming their children after some type of cheese, Colby, Brie, and Jack. I love that. That made me laugh.
The other thing is that experience with a guy who was passing for an Anglo was a real event, real experience. And there were a number of them that were events from, you know, my life that I put in there. But that one was, the kid had dyed his hair and was going by Sandy. And I thought, wow, okay. You know, I guess I picked Bobby. Maybe I wasn't too far off from that. But
Well, another funny part was when Skinny, who is playing football, and he's pretty good. He returns a kickoff and really puts on a show doing it. And it's as a sports fan, if you follow football, it really is written from the viewpoint of kind of a thrilling story. But then his family shows up at one of his games, and it's in the Orange Bowl, and he doesn't know that they're there. And it's really funny to hear his family trying to comprehend the sport. They don't get it. That is hilarious.
Thank you. It's kind of a takeoff on Andy Griffith's football, you know. it's the Latino version of what it was football. And So part of that comes from my mom. You know, when she would watch football games, she would ask me the strangest questions, like, why do the numbers go one way to the middle and then they start going down again? You know, like, do they lose points when they go past that line, or what is it? You know, it was, you know, pretty easy to write that part about the questions about football because I had lived it for sure.
You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. And we're talking to Raul Ramos y Sanchez about his book, The Skinny Years. And be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 10:30 when James Lee Burke will be returning to the program. My 14th interview with Jim at 10:30 tomorrow morning. Raul Ramos y Sanchez joins us. His novel is The Skinny Years. And this is very much a 1960s novel. When we get to the end, you give us an update, kind of a, well, this is what happened to Skinny update. And I had to think reading that, this is slightly autobiographical here. Raul, I know you're going to deny it, but what happened to Skinny at the end, that's kind of your story a little bit, isn't it?
Well, you know, again, Vic, you're really picking up on some good stuff. Yes, and here's why, though. And remember, I had lost touch with the family that the story was based on, so I had no idea how Skinny, you know, the young people of that generation, of that family, had turned out. So I kind of based it a little bit upon my own experience. The Skinny character really is a composite.
Okay, all right.
That one is, again, like I say, there's some of my experiences in Skinny. There's some of my experiences in Loco. There's some of my experiences really in those two characters for sure. So it's not, it isn't like a straight up, I made it a composite because I thought that it made for more drama in terms of how the story evolved. And in particular, the romantic parts, because we haven't talked about Janice. And do you mind if I kind of go a little bit into the whole story with the Bachmans?
No, I don't mind. Let's talk about it. But nothing to do with swimwear, okay? We're not going there.
Well, all right. We'll leave that part out.
Okay.
But Skinny is also, he has a huge crush as a kid on his nanny in Cuba. She's the only female that really pays him any attention. And so but she's also, you know, a young woman, and he's an 8-year-old. So this kind of dream, I describe it as like, to him, his attraction to her is like the smell of coffee. You know, he's never really tasted it, but he knows it's something very mysterious and adult and attractive. And so when he leaves and he's forced to leave Cuba, you know, he's Skinny's brokenhearted. At this point, he's not even called Skinny, he's Victor. But he's brokenhearted because he has to leave behind, you know, this female that he cares for. And then his first day of school in American school, he meets this little blonde girl who, through an interpreter, says her dad thinks that he's a hero because his father is fighting communism. And all of a sudden, there's the new love interest in Skinny's life. And but he's terrified because he's a little chubby kid. Everybody makes fun of him. He has no way of even letting Janice know that he is interested at all. And so it evolves over time. It takes him probably 3 years to get the nerve to talk to her. And then eventually their relationship develops. And I don't want to give away too much more, but that begins to grow. But part of the reason why he's attracted to Janice is because she lives in that world that he only sees on television. You know, it's like the Father Knows Best, the Leave It to Beaver world where everybody knows about holidays. Everybody understands, you know, your grandmother doesn't cook a turkey with the giblet still inside of it. Uh-huh. It's like they know, they understand this world, and they're real Americans, quote unquote. And so part of his attraction to Janice is the fact that, you know, she's that ideal. She's that assimilated, you know, perfect American, which he would only hope to be. And so part of his attraction, obviously, is that as well. So it is a romantic relationship, but it's also a metaphorical one, too.
And it's also forbidden because his family doesn't approve of him. They want him to meet a nice Cuban girl.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes. Now you're bringing Abuela again into the picture. His grandmother is not at... She thinks everything Cuban is the best ever. And, of course, the Cuban women are the most virtuous. The Cuban men are the strongest and, the most successful. And, yeah, so she's – Abuela is not at all happy about his relationship with Janice. Yeah, true.
In case you've just tuned in, you're listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. The Book Nook comes your way every Saturday morning during the 7 o'clock hour. And on Sunday mornings at 10:30, my guest today is Raul Ramos y Sanchez. We're talking about his new novel, The Skinny Years. I've had Raul on the program before. And Raul, when I first introduced you this morning, I mentioned that this was a very different book for you. I guess I should probably have you explain why that is, because these other books are yours. It's very much alternative history. Do you want to talk about your other books?
Sure. The Class H trilogy was the first three books that I had published, and that was a story that was much, much different on a much broader canvas with a much wider social political context. And the story centers around a Mexican American family living in Los Angeles during a time more or less 5 or 10 years in the future, when the immigration crisis has really started to reach the boiling point, where the kind of rhetoric that we're seeing, well, you know, I mean, with our present candidate of the GOP, we're really seeing the rhetoric come to a whole new level. But this imagines that situation carried out to the point where you begin to see rioting in Hispanic communities, and it leads into a backlash by white supremacists, and eventually leads to an insurrection in the U.S. By Hispanics who have been sort of forced together by virtue of prejudice. And so this trilogy imagines this world evolving, this horrible, nightmare scenario, evolving into an insurrection in which the Southwest parts of the United States, the Latinos, try and make a historical claim to that territory, much as the way the Jews did in Israel, saying, you know, this land once belonged to us and we now want it back. And through a number of political and international machinations that this actually becomes a recognized provisional state and leads to a civil war on American soil. Very, very dark story, a cautionary tale, which, of course, a lot of the people on the far right seem to miss. Some of them thought it was a manifesto that I had written. somebody called me a Marxican, which I thought was really interesting because, you know, it's like Mexican and Marxist, and like I'm Cuban and I work make my living in advertising, so you could not get a little farther, any farther off than that from me. But again, the book stirred so much controversy, and I got a good deal of publicity with it. I did a lot of exposure through it, and so it was so refreshing to back away from all that and write a personal story that you know had love and humor and was much more intimate and much lighter. So this is the Skinny Years is quite a change for me, and I'm really enjoying the difference in the reader reaction. And in the process of writing it, you know, when you can't write a story like the Class H trilogy without getting yourself in a dark place. And so I'm glad to kind of be writing a little bit lighter story. It's been better. It's been fun.
Someone called you a Marxican. That is so wrong on so many different levels. What a terrible thing. Who were these right-wing commentators that were snipping at you? Who were they?
Oh, well, one of the biggest sites was the Free Republic site. VDare.com also was, I think VDare.com was the ones, were the ones who called me the Marxican. There were some people that wrote Amazon reviews that compared my book to the Turner Diaries, and
No.
I don't know how many readers are familiar with that, but that is an absolutely racist screed that they imagine a white supremacist uprising in the United States, and many in the right look at that as a how-to manual for revolution, and the fact that some minds would read my stories and think that I was advocating a revolution would be like saying, well, Orwell was advocating totalitarianism. It's like the exact opposite.
Yeah.
But there are some minds that I think are irony impaired. I mean, you know, they can't see past the content. They're so afraid that the minute that they get whiff of a book that says, oh, a Latino revolution, well, it must be the Reconquista. So I've had to deal with that kind of wackiness personally for a while. And so I'm like I said, it's refreshing to be writing about something that's a little less controversial.
Well, that manifesto you just cited, I can recall that the Oklahoma City bomber, Timothy McVeigh, mm-hmm. that was his favorite book. And that kind of mm-hmm. tells you everything you need to know about that particular book. I have noticed that, though, about Amazon. If there's a book that has any kind of controversial message, a lot of times the so-called customer reviewers over there will post these screed mm-hmm. reviews where they tear a book apart and give it a really low rating, and you can tell by reading the reviews that they haven't read the book and they got their opinions from Rush Limbaugh or somebody that was ranting about the book.
Well, you know, when you say that, I found, and I actually, one of them, I complained to Amazon because you could see where they had literally cut and pasted it from one of these wacko. I think it was like, I can't remember the name of the website, Newsmax or some other place. Somebody had done a review, and they just copied it, cut and pasted, copy-pasted it right into the review. And they did finally pull that one because it was so obviously slanted. But, you know, the other thing that's interesting is there's a white supremacist book that references my first novel, America Libre. And interestingly, it describes it as a book where Hispanics joyfully slaughter whites in quest of their revolution. And then it quotes and it says, and this book was given an International Latino Book Award and made a summer read by Latina Magazine. They neglect to mention that it was also a USA Today summer reads, that it won a reward from the Writers League of Texas, you know, that I've been in book festivals from Arkansas, Wisconsin, and Ohio, that a lot of, you know, they leave out the mainstream references and only say, ah, yeah, this is a book about killing white people, and look who loves it. And it's that kind of twisting of facts that really just, you know, it's when you venture into that territory, I had no idea that people could be so narrow, but, you know, surprising.
Yeah, well, welcome to America. We're going to build a wall, and we're going to make you pay for it. My guess is Raul Ramos y Sanchez, and his novel is The Skinny Years, and this must be refreshing after the controversy that you apparently elicited on some fronts with those other books to have something mm-hmm. like this, because this is fairly non-controversial. This is just a nice page-turner, and I think it's a feel-good book.
I hope so. I hope so. It certainly was very emotionally one of those things that it made me happy to be able to share. And, you know, the other thing that in terms of Cuba being in the news right now with all the normalizing of relations and so forth, you know, one of the strongest opponents of it are actually the first generation exiles in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
The New York Times just had an article recently about how there's this big generational gap between the second generation exiles and the first gen. The second gen now knows they can go back and visit, and so their parents are very upset because, you know, they don't want anything to do with Castro. They feel like if you're going back there and spending money, it's supporting the government. And I think it's the other way around. My friend who's a city commissioner in Key West said, you know, the best antidote to communism is a well-made cheeseburger. We can do more with engagement and bringing in ideas and commerce and getting people excited about the idea of a market economy than we can about letting them continue to tell stories down there about how all the Cubans in Miami are starving to death and, you know, aren't you lucky of how things are here, because that was the story that they used to tell, but now they know better. Travel. And the other thing is that there's a third generation of more recently arrived Cubans who now travel back and forth. Like, I have two cousins in Miami who travel back and forth to Cuba all the time. And if you'd have told me that, you know, 5 years ago, I'd have said, you're crazy. You can't go back to Cuba. It's behind the Iron Curtain. You know, it's like, no. They go back and forth all the time, and their kids go back and forth all the time. And so it's becoming normal, and that's normal is the path to change without bullets and blood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first revolution we had. That's how it was brought about in Cuba, was with bullets and blood. I'd like to see the next transition in Cuba's government happen through ballots, through trade, through the economy, and transition to a place where people have more than they had before, but they don't have to give up the education, which is one of the advances. Cuba has a higher literacy rate than the United States does. So that kind of thing, you have to take your hat off to the government there to be able to do that. At the same time, though, it's still a place where people have very few freedoms, where you don't know what really you're allowed to say or not allowed to say. Everyone is always on eggshells about what you can say. And with each subsequent trip to Cuba, my family opens up to me more and more on that political level. I was having a discussion in a public place. We were at one of the tourist sites with a whole group of family. It must have been about 15 of us. And one of my cousin's wives said that they weren't ready for American tourism because the infrastructure wasn't ready yet. And I said, well, you know, you got to do something about this dual currency thing. This is crazy. You know, you need to have one form of currency here, and you need to have credit cards because Americans aren't going to deal with this cash economy. And my cousin very, very casually put his arm around my shoulder and says, cousin, let's not talk about politics. And I thought, oh, I see, that's where the line is.
Yeah.
So it's a very, you know, it's a place where you have to walk on eggshells, and I'd like to see it be not that. And I hope that it will be. I think the path that we're taking now is a good path. It's a positive path to me. And while it's far from perfect, we are certainly, you know, going to make more progress than we have done in 50 years of an embargo and Cold War mentality.
Well, Raul, I appreciate your thoughts on that topic, and we will stay away from politics, even though we could go down that road and talk about the two Cuban-American presidential candidates, Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, and how intriguing that must have been for you to observe their candidacies. But we're running out of time. We have just enough time for you to give us that information again about your event at the library.
Sure. It's going to be September the 12th. It's called the Second Monday Authors Program, September the 12th from 1 to 3 p.m. It's in the library lobby of the Centerville Library, and it's the one on Spring Valley. And also with me will be John Kachuba, who will be introducing and presenting his most recent book called The Savage Apostle, and I will be presenting The Skinny Years. And if anyone has any questions or wants more information, they can visit my website at www.raulramos.com. It's RAULRAMOS.com. And they can find out more about The Skinny Years and my other books as well.
And did you say the time that is on that date?
The time on September the 12th is 1 to 3 p.m.
Okay. Well, Raul, we really appreciate your time.
Oh, Vic, it's been a pleasure as always.
My guest has been Raul Ramos y Sanchez. His new novel is The Skinny Years. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes. Thanks for listening.